passages, actually, Billy came up with the third one that we were looking for, is rather than Numbers, but it'd be the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 10, verse 9. Therefore, Levi has no portion or inheritance with his brethren. The Lord is his inheritance, just as the Lord your God promised him. And then also out of Deuteronomy, chapter 18, and verse 2. Therefore, they shall have no inheritance among their brethren. The Lord is their inheritance, as he said to them. Now, Billy, you said Numbers in chapter 18 and verse 20. Is that correct? 18:20 says, Then the Lord said to Aaron, You shall have no inheritance in their land, nor shall you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. Okay, now we've been primarily dealing with the Torah and basic requirements or basic responsibilities, general information dealing with the tribe of Levi. By the way, this is not on the priest tonight. It's really on the tribe of Levi. But we're going to have, because the priest, every priest, of course, is a Levite. Not every Levite is a priest. There's going to be things that are going to overlap and link into. I am hoping tonight to primarily finish about with the Levites. I don't know if I can. It might be next week that we finish with that. But as soon as we do, to move into the priesthood. And there, to be in opposite, we'll be dealing primarily with the priest, and we'll have the Levites keep on coming in because they're just linked to one another throughout their history. So we're going to move primarily now to the book of First Chronicles. And we're dealing to the time of the monarchy. There's all types of opinions that all of this stuff evolved. I don't believe that. I believe that there was a certain type of evolution. For instance, what we mentioned before, when you change from having a tent to an actual building, when you change from being in the wilderness and everybody linked or clumped together to being spread out over a country, things are going to change naturally. But primarily, the position and the function of the Levites and the position and the function of the priest will remain basically the same. Let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter 23. 1 Chronicles chapter 23. And actually through 27, we're not going to read this, not tonight, but this is the division of the Leviim, the division of the Levites as divided by David. Now, remember that at the time of David, there was no temple. This is pre-temple, okay? But it's in preparation for the coming temple. So you have the division of the Levites in chapter 23, and then in chapter 24, it goes into the division of the priest. And in the latter portion of chapter 24, starting in verse 20 through 31, it deals with other Levites. Then chapter 25 deals with, again, the Levites when it deals with the musicians. Chapter 26 deals with the gatekeepers. And gets more specific when we get to verse 20 through the end of the chapter, which deals with the treasuries and the other duties. And then in chapter 27, it's going to deal with your military divisions of your various tribes. That would be outside of the tribe of Levi and outside of the Kohanim, the priest. Let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 27. And I want to read down in chapter 12. I want to start actually in verse 23 to get the context and read down through verse 28. Now these were the numbers of the divisions that were equipped for the war and came to David at Hebron to turn over the kingdom of Shaul to him according to the word of the Lord. of the children of Yehuda bearing shield and spear, 6,800 armed for war. Of the children of Simeon, mighty men of valor, fit for war, 7,100 of the children of Levi. So even here, we see the tribe of Simeon and the tribe of Levi joined together like we'd seen before. Remember how they seem to be linked back at the first. And we also see them in conjunction with the tribe of Yehuda, which we had mentioned before. Of the children of Levi, 4,600. Jehoiada, the leader of the Aaronites. And with him, 3,700. Zadok, a young man, a valiant warrior, and from his father's house, 22 captains. And it goes on. This is what's happening here is that they are transferring the entire kingdom of Israel to David. But we see Levi is prominent among these. Let's go to 2 Chronicles chapter 23. In 2 Chronicles chapter 23, we'll be reading verses 2 through 9 and then picking up two more verses. This is in the time of King Joash, and he is one of the righteous kings. 2 Chronicles chapter 23, verse 2. And they went throughout Yehuda and gathered the Levi'im from all the cities of Yehuda and the chief fathers of Israel, and they came to Jerusalem. Then all the congregation made a covenant with the king in the house of God, and he said to them, "Behold, the king's son shall reign at the Lord, as the Lord had said of the sons of David. This is what you shall do, one third of you entering on the Sabbath." Now this is of the Levites. "Of the priest and the Levites shall be keeping watch over the doors." Now this is where that we have that the Mishmarot, M-I-S-H-M-A-R-O-T, the Mishmarot, which are the divisions, the courses, change from one Sabbath to another Sabbath. This is where it's validated for you in Scripture. There is a course of the priest. There is a course of the Levites, which is what you saw in 1 Chronicles chapter 23 through 26. Continuing on. "One third shall be at the king's house, one third at the gate of the foundation. All the people shall be in the courts of the house of the Lord, but let no one come into the house of the Lord except the priest and those of the Levites who serve. They may go in, for they are holy, but all the people shall keep the watch of the Lord." When it says all the people, it's talking specifically about all the people of the Levites, that was their job to, once again, as we saw before, that they were camped around the Mishkan in the wilderness to protect the people and to be a barrier between the people and the Lord. So they had the same function in the monarchy. I'm in chapter 23. I'm now in verse 7, starting verse 7. "And the Levites shall surround the king on all sides, every man with his weapons in his hand, and whoever comes into the house, let him be put to death. Yet you are to be with the king when he comes in and when he goes out." So the Levites and all Yehuda did according to all that Jehoiada the priest commanded, and each man took his men who were to be on duty on the Sabbath with those who were going off duty on the Sabbath, for Jehoiada the priest had not dismissed the divisions. But Jehoiada the priest gave to the captains of hundreds the spears and the large and small shields which had been King David's. They were in the temple of God. Okay, let's go to verse 18 and 19. "Also Jehoiada appointed the oversight of the house of the Lord to the hand of the Kohanim, the Levi'im, whom David had assigned in the house of the Lord to offer the burnt offerings of the Lord, as is written in the Torah of Moshe, with rejoicing and with singing, as it was established by David. And he set the gatekeepers at the gate of the house of the Lord, so that no one who was in any way unclean should enter." All right. Let's go to chapter 24 of 2 Chronicles. And we'll start reading in verse 5. Then he gathered the Kohanim and the Leviim and said to them, go out to the cities of Yehuda and gather from all of Israel money to repair the house of your God from year to year, and see that you do it quickly. However, the Leviim did not do it quickly. But we have here recorded one of their responsibilities. The Leviim, along with the priest, have the duty of collecting the money throughout the country for the temple. For instance, there was right about a month before Passover, there are in the second temple period, we assume that it was the same in the first temple period, but they have 13 separate boxes that are set up throughout the country. Now, these are going to be set up, of course, at the same place every year. It's not going to be just at random they set 13 of these boxes up. The boxes are tzedakah boxes, boxes of charity, and they're shaped like a shofar. And the people put their offerings inside them, and they collect this, they'll bring it back to Jerusalem, but it's under the charge of the Kohanim and the Leviim. So the king called Jehoiada, the chief priest, and said to him, why have you not required the Leviim to bring in from Yehuda and from Jerusalem the collection, according to the commandment of Moshe, the servant of the Lord, and of the congregation of Israel, for the tabernacle of witness? And here, by the way, he's calling the tabernacle of witness is the same thing as the temple. For the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, had broken into the house of God, and had also presented all the dedicated things of the house of the Lord to the Baalim. Then at the king's commandment, they made a chest and set it outside at the gate of the house of the Lord. And they made a proclamation throughout Yehuda and Jerusalem to bring to the Lord the collection that Moshe, the servant of God, had imposed on Israel in the wilderness. Then all the leaders and all the people rejoiced, brought their contributions, put them into the chest until all had given. So it was at that time when the chest was brought to the king's official by the hand of the Leviim, and when they saw that there was much money, that the king's scribe and the high priest officer came and emptied the chest. Okay, here you have mention of the high priest officer. So you might make a note about that. And emptied the chest, took it, and returned it to its place. Thus they did day by day and gathered money in abundance. Then the king and Jehoiada gave it to those who did the work of the service of the house of the Lord, and they hired masons and carpenters to repair the house of the Lord, and also those who worked in iron and bronze to restore the house of the Lord. So the workmen labored, and the work was completed by them. They restored the house of God to its original condition and reinforced it. When they had finished, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada. They made from it articles for the house of the Lord, articles for serving and offering, spoons and vessels of gold and silver, and they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. Okay, I believe that's far enough on that particular passage. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 12. What we're going to be looking at is about four or five different passages that deal with how the tribe of Levi migrated from the northern kingdom down to the southern kingdom. How that they basically left from Israel, some of this being before the time of the Assyrian overthrow, but because of the idolatry of the northern kings, they left and came to the south. Now, you might remember that Jeroboam the first is going to be at the time of Rehoboam in the south. Okay? Let me give a genealogy here. Okay, we have the dual monarchy. Which is going to have three kings. That will be King Shaul, King David, and King Shlomo. Now, do you understand what we mean when we say dual monarchy? There is a kingdom of Judah, and there's a kingdom of Israel. They each have their own army. They even have different legislation in certain items between the two. So they're not the same kingdom. There never was a united kingdom of Israel. You had the dual monarchy with one king over the two kingdoms. Then you have where you get two kingdoms, two kings. Your first king is Rehoboam in the south over Judah, and in the north Jeroboam the first over Israel. Now Jeroboam has a problem. He doesn't have Jerusalem. He doesn't have the central sanctuary that had been established by David and was very firm from the time of King Shlomo. And so he has to make two new sanctuaries. He makes one at Bethel, and he makes the other at Dan. He has another problem, and that of the priesthood. Because God had recognized the sanctuary in Jerusalem, observant and loyal Levi'im and Kohanim would not serve in his sanctuaries at Bethel and Dan. Apostate Levi'im and apostate Kohanim would. But he takes a priesthood from all the tribes in order to make up his priesthood at these two sanctuaries. So this, of course, to those that follow after God, would be extremely repulsive. So many of these will leave the Levi'im and the Kohanim and come down to the southern kingdom. And of course, as time goes on and we get to the time of the Assyrians, at the time of the Assyrian king, Sargon II, who overthrows, actually it was started by Shalmaneser, begins the overthrow of the northern kingdom, but he is slain by Sargon II in the midst of the war. We have the overthrow of the northern kingdom. Many, many of the people will flee at that time. Of the remnant that is left of Levi'im and Kohanim up to the north, will flee to the south. And so we're going to look at some of the passages about that. Billy, you have thoughts? Okay. Let's start in 1 Kings chapter 12. We've already done that one, right? No. 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 31. This is Jeroboam's golden calves and his shrines at Bethel and Dan. He made shrines on the high places and made priests from every class of people who were not of the sons of Levi. And it implies that the majority of the sons of Levi just would not do this. Chapter 13, verse 13:33. After this event, Jeroboam did not turn from his evil way, but again he made priests from every class of people for the high places. Whoever wished, he consecrated him, and he became one of the priests of the high places. And this thing was the sin of the house of Jeroboam, so as to exterminate and destroy it from the face of the earth. Let's go to 2 Chronicles chapter 11. In 2 Chronicles chapter 11, verse 13 through 17, and from all their territories, the Kohanim and the Levi'im, who were in all of Israel, took their stand with him, with Rehoboam. For the Levi'im left their common lands and their possessions and came to Yehuda and Jerusalem, for Jeroboam and his sons had rejected them from serving as Kohanim to the Lord. Then he appointed for himself Kohanim for the high places, for the demons, and the calf idols which he had made. And after the Levi'im left, those from all the tribes of Israel, such as set their heart to seek the Lord God of Israel, came to Jerusalem to sacrifice to the Lord God of their fathers. So they strengthened the kingdom of Yehuda and made Rehoboam, the son of Shlomo, strong for 3 years, because they walked in the way of David and Shlomo for 3 years. Let's go to chapter 13, 2 Chronicles, verse 9. This is where, again, it's referring to Jeroboam. Have you not cast out the priests of the Lord, the sons of Aaron, and the Levi'im, and made for yourselves priests like the peoples of other lands, so that whoever comes to consecrate himself with a young bull and seven rams may be a priest of things that are not God's? But as for us, the Lord is our God, and we have not forsaken him, and the priests or the Kohanim who minister to the Lord are the sons of Aaron, and the Levi'im attend to their duties. And they burn to the Lord every morning and every evening burnt sacrifices and sweet incense. They also set the bread of the faces in order on the pure table, and the menorah of gold with its lamps to burn every evening. For we keep the command of the Lord our God, but you have forsaken him. Now look, God himself is with us as our head, and his Kohanim was sounding trumpets to sound the alarm against you. O children of Israel, do not fight against the Lord God of your fathers, for you shall not prosper. And then it goes on into describing the battle, the war that takes place. Let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter 23, and we see in this chapter that the Levi'im take a leading role as being overseers in the temple, or actually in the work of the house of the Lord. 1 Chronicles chapter 23 and verse 4. Of these 24,000 were to look after the work of the house of the Lord, 6,000 were officers and judges, 4,000 were gatekeepers, and 4,000 praised the Lord with musical instruments, which I made, said David, for giving praise. So this is not talking about Kohanim, it's talking about Levi'im. So they have a principal part. Here you see them as the choir, the gatekeepers, the musicians, and the guardians of the threshold.
What are the officers and judges? Verse 4.
Were officers and judges. 6,000 were officers and juddges. That would be officers of the temple. They served in offices and functions within the temple, and they're going to judge concerning the religious law. At this time, during the monarchy, the court was divided up. Into two sections. You had one section will be the civil court, and the head over the civil court is going to be the king. This would be along the lines of a man comes to the court and he says, so-and-so's bull got out of his fence and he gored my cousin, and or he destroyed so much of my field. That's a civil matter. And so that would come before the king or one of the king's officials. And so then you had the religious court, and this was overseen by the high priest. Now, the high priest, in actuality, just like the king, might not take the majority of these courts. He had judges under him to judge on lesser matters of religion. For instance, someone comes and says, okay, I had a vessel that was dedicated to the Lord. I didn't realize it, but I accidentally used this for another purpose. And so the court would judge on this. That would be a religious matter. Now, this changes somewhat, but I'm not clear on how it changed when we get to the Second Temple period. Let me explain why. This is my opinion of why. Okay, it doesn't mean that that's really the way it is. When we look at the Talmud, where it describes, for instance, Sanhedrin, where it describes how the courts worked, it very obviously leaves out the role of the priest. It gives you the impression that the priest really had no role to speak of in these matters. Well, we know that that's not true. But we do know this. We know that there was a very heavy competition between the rabbinical party and the priest. And the rabbinical party liked to jab the priest every time they could, and the priest liked to jab the rabbinical party every time they could. But eventually, the temple's destroyed. There is a rise of the rabbis and their importance, and the platform of the priest is gone. They have no books that they write, whereas the rabbis, they write the Talmud. So in their edition, it leaves out the role of the priest. And so I don't believe we have an accurate presentation. Now, that's where the Dead Sea Scrolls could, I'm not saying they do, but that's where that other manuscripts could come in and begin to give us a new picture of the way that certain things were.
Okay, you described both the civil and the religious. Were both of those in existence from the time they entered the land until the dispersion, until 70?
Excuse me. Yes. Yes, they were still in existence. And interestingly enough, the religious court had preeminence when they returned from the land. If you'll remember, Ezra, Yeshua the son of Jehozadak, they played a more prominent role than Zerubbabel and Nehemiah. And so when they first returned back, the priests are really the ones that organize everything, that keep they're teaching the law, they're doing these type of things. But that changes fairly rapidly.
You hear the word that Israel is the only theocracy. What will happen in the future? I mean, I've been under the impression that it would be the rule of the whole world would be theocratic.
Well, okay, you have Zechariah chapter 14, verse 9. It says that in that day the Lord will be one and his name one, meaning that all the world is under the kingship of God. And the kingship of God, of course, on earth is going to be represented by the Messiah, which is in the book of Ezekiel presented as the prince. Now, an interesting point concerning the priesthood in the book of Ezekiel, in chapters 40 through 48, there is not a mention of the high priest. He's totally left out, and it seems very strange. But he is apparently replaced by the prince, who the prince, the Nasi, is serving in the role as king and priest, according to the prophecy of Zechariah chapter 6. So, and it's an excellent question. It will be different in the future as these two come under the head of the Messiah. Now, there is a possibility, though, that we'll have something along the lines of what they had in the wilderness. They had Moshe, who was over the people. And then you had a high priesthood under him. Aaron did not supersede Moshe. Moshe was over Aaron. However, Moshe did not have the right to perform some of the things that the high priest had. I don't know if I cleared that up, or I'm just saying that in the future there might be Messiah with a high priest, but he does not have the preeminence of Messiah. He will serve under him.
Well, if the future one is the son of David, which is Judah, the ruling class, it would seem, okay, here's the civil king that is ruling, but with a religious background, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, it's one of the things that also states that the Messiah must also descend from the house of Levi, as well as from the house of Judah. And so that he can fulfill more roles than one. Okay, see if I can find my place. Let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter 9, and we'll start in verse 14. And we have quite a bit that we're going to read here.